Greetings, everybody, and welcome to another edition of Karate Cafe's podcast. This is episode number 42, recorded on Sunday, March 4th, 2007. I'm Gene Myers, a student of Shorin Ryu, Shorin Kan, Karate and Two Circle Jiu-Jitsu, and as I'm joined again, as always, by Karate Cafe's virtual tough guys. First is Pete Shambo, who's also a student of Shorin Ryu, Shorin Kan, Karate. Hey, Pete, how you doing?
Hey, Gene, how's it going? Not bad tonight.
Good, good. And the third member of our panel, as always, is Paul Wilson, who's a student of Shorin Ryu Kenshin Kan Karate. Paul, how are you tonight?
Hey, I'm doing great, Gene. How are you, Pete?
Not bad, Paul. Hey, I'd like to thank everybody for sending us email to karatecafe@gmail.com. We're getting a little bit more response every week, and pretty soon we'll have enough. Maybe we'll dedicate a show to answering a few of the emails or taking you up a lot. Some people have been emailing us suggestions for show topics, and we're taking them into consideration and trying to figure out how much we know about it. I mean, you know how well prepared we are, guys.
Hey, ignorance of a topic has never stopped us before.
So that's been going on. But you guys, have you been out in the real karate world? Anything interesting happening out there?
Well, I've actually been in the virtual karate world. I'm a member of several boards. I mean, I know we all are, and I'm sure that a lot of our listeners are as well. And I've gotten in kind of a little message board kumite with another guy on another message board, and he brought up something that I thought was kind of an interesting topic for a couple of reasons. They were talking about, it was actually off topic of whatever the board was about, but this person wrote in, somebody had said that their black belts and brown belts train together most of the time. And so this person responded that says, if your black belts and brown belts train together most of the time, that when you get to black belt, your school will have very little to teach you. And I was kind of like, okay. So I wrote him to try and clarify, because then right after that he says, Shodan means beginner. It symbolizes a step into a bigger world. I'm like, well, then you just contradicted the paragraph you just had. So I wrote him back, and he said, I tried to get him to clarify it. And he said that if black belts don't have their own class, and they teach all the same things to brown and black belts, and nothing different to the black belts, what's the point of being a black belt? So
proficiency?
Well, my thrust to him was essentially that, black belt is a beginning. And, there's, depending on the style, 5 or 10 levels after that, that you're in no hurry to get to. I mean, it's going to take you the rest of your life to get there, whereas opposed to, in some schools, it's, 2 years and you're a black belt. So, and then I also said that, when I train with brown belts, the difference is when you're a black belt training with a brown belt is you're trying to bring this brown belt up to Shodan level. And they should, by that point, have better control. They should be a little more versed in techniques, and they should actually give the black belts more of a challenge. I guess he was also saying, they have their black belt classes where they learn to teach, and so I was like, well, I learned to teach in class.
Yeah, I learned to teach by teaching.
My sensei would come by and go like, oh, try this, or I would ask somebody the question, and they'd say, try this. But being actually in the class, working with someone, there's not, I guess, all things being equal, there's not as many techniques, per se, from at black belt level. There are more, and this is a generality, of course, there are more difficult techniques, there are more challenging techniques, but in my branch of Shorin Ryu, a lot of the stuff builds on all the stuff that you learn from 10th Q to 1st Q, and so it's a refinement of that. So why, it's not like there's any really more that you should be learning, at black belt level. There's more refining and learning, you're learning more complicated techniques and better techniques, but I think the bulk of what you're actually learning, the foundation of what you're learning, is everything in the Q level. So And in my school, and I guess my thrust is, and in my school, everyone was in the same class. We didn't have beginners and black belts. We'd have black belt classes every now and again, but by and large, we're just there training. You're training with green belts, you're training with white belts. You know, you rotate through on the line when you're doing Ippon Kumite. And so I'm like, well, how are your guys' classes, and maybe how our listeners could write in and tell us how their classes are doing. But, I mean, is there a lot of segregation? Is there a lot of, you know, they learn their stuff, and they learn their stuff, and we learn our stuff, and there's near the twain shall meet?
Well, it sounds to me like this Shodan is, by earning his black belt, feels that now he's now been given the keys to the executive washroom, so to speak. And now he's entitled to be in some kind of a inner circle, and somehow he's above, you know, his peers who are of Q rank, you know, and he's expecting that he's going to be enlightened by, you know, all these, you know, secret techniques or whatever. And it's clearly the wrong attitude to have, in my opinion. I mean, on so many levels. First of all, just to start, his basics must be perfect then, you know, never mind these, you know, advanced techniques. Let's just talk about basics. And I mean, when you earn your Shodan, I mean, you basically, you know, the curriculum, you kind of got an idea about what the basics are, but you continually refine them. Heck, I mean, look at how long we've been training, and look at how long we've been Dan ranks, and we're still working on basics. You know, so even when you're training with a Q rank student, you're still working on your basics. And in addition to, like Pete was saying, trying to teach them and you know, work on your instructional skills, what have you. But it's always an opportunity for the higher rank to work on basics. And you should never stop developing your basics. So that's one area that this Shodan is clearly wrong, in my opinion.
Well, I agree. With the two things that I can think of is, first of all, when you're working with, say you're doing drills, I work on a total different aspect of my craft when I'm working with an upper rank as opposed to working with a lower rank. With a lower rank, I might be working more on control, working more on being aware of what they're doing. When I work with Eugene, if it's a cooperation drill, I know pretty much what you're going to throw. So, I mean, I don't have to think about it. It's sad, you know, I shouldn't be saying it this way, but I know if it's supposed to be a rear punch, it's going to be a rear punch. With a lower belt, I might make myself more aware of what they're going to do because you don't know. So does that make any sense at all, or did I just sound real stupid?
Well, first, I think you mean a rear hand punch, yeah, not like you. I could punch
thank
you
you
in the rear.
Yeah. Thank you. But
that's true. I mean, you know, there are cooperation drills that you do, Yakusoku Kumites, for example, or Bunkai that you do. And when you're working with somebody of a Dan rank, you know, I mean, there are things that you can work on because you know what's coming, and you could kind of maybe play around with Tai Sabaki a little different or whatever, you know. But with a lower rank, again, you're not only teaching, so you want to make sure that you're doing everything correctly. That you've got to basically be a role model for them. And also, you have to focus on your basics, you know. Maybe you can't do with a Q rank what you can do with, like, say, a fourth Dan or a fifth Dan or a sixth Dan, but still, it's a good opportunity for you to, again, I can't emphasize enough, work on your basics.
No.
Yeah, you know, the things that I learned Saturday, we had a weekend training down in Athens with one of our regional directors, and, you know, there's a few people there that I didn't know and I hadn't really trained with, and there was a brown belt who I trained with, and he was pretty hard. I mean, he was very tense, you know, he wasn't very fluid and stuff like that. So, I mean, when you're training with, and especially, you know, if you're training with somebody who's like a white belt or a green belt, not that I'm disparaging our Q-level brothers, but, you know, they might not have the power, they might not have a few of the techniques that a brown belt would have that might come out of nowhere. I mean, the guy was blocking really hard, and I had to bring my game up. you know. And if I'm training with a Don rank, you know, I can go like, you know, hey, go easy, or, you know, I'm expecting a little more, I'm expecting something different from a Udansha, you know, as far as control and everything else. And brown belts, a lot of the brown belts that I've worked with are they're just getting control, you know, they have power, but they may not have necessarily the control yet, or they may not be fluid enough yet. And then, you know, but also training with Q levels, also kind of gets you prepared for the, you know, the surprise. Because, you know, if you're dealing with, you know, second, third, fourth, whatever, and you pretty much know how they're going to come at you, you know, or you're, you're kind of like expecting, okay, this guy's a couple ranks higher than me. He's got some stuff that maybe I don't know, you know, and you're waiting for it. But if you got somebody who's a white belt, they may come with something just out of the blue, you know, because they're not... Yeah, and the argument with the traditional martial arts is, you know, they're not fighting the way you're supposed to fight in the dojo, you know.
Exactly.
And so throw some crazy punch or kick out from the middle of nowhere, and you've got to react to it. But, you know, someone who's hit a Don rank by now and kind of knows, you know, kind of the boundaries, and will say like, hey, I'm going to do this, you know, I'm going to kind of freelance it, and you know, you're ready for it. But, you know, somebody who's at a brown belt level could still do that, and they've got training on their side at that point. So, do you guys segregate your classes, so to speak?
No. We have one upper belt class, which is mostly for refining our techniques. You know, doing things that we don't do with the lower belts. But other than that, all our classes are integrated. Yes,
when you're doing a black belt class, I mean, you're going over black belt kata, maybe some black belt one steps, that sort of thing, right? But I mean, it's not like there's this whole secret scroll that people are bringing out.
Well, you do have to know the handshake to get in the door for that class. But if you know that handshake, you're fine. That was a joke.
It's interesting. The way that we have our classes are fully integrated. We have anyone from a white belt up through, like, Renchi Muso, who's a fifth Don. We all train together most of the week. On Friday nights, we have a black belt class. This class didn't start out to be a class for black belts. It started out really to prepare brown belts for their Shodan test, or to work with people who were going to be, you know, testing for their next rank. Really, for brown belts testing the Shodan testing the Nidan, and so on and so forth. That's how it evolved, and it just turned into like a black belt class. Now, sure, if there's somebody who's a brown belt who's going to be testing for their black belt, you know, they can come or we'll set up another class for them. But that's really how it started out. So it kind of contradicts your Kumite opponent's perspective there on your forum, because that class was set up so black belts and brown belts could train together specifically, you know. And it was a big help for them. It was a big help for the brown belts, because I feel that they were better prepared, you know, for their tests. And it was a big help for the black belts, because, you know, they got to teach. They got to work with, you know, somebody who might have a case of brown belt itis, you know. That's that syndrome that some brown belts get when they're so close to their black belt that they can taste it, you know, and they just have that edge to them. They're the only more dangerous animal in a dojo, I think, is a white belt, you know. Because they're just, you know, oh, black belt, I'm going to be one of you soon, you know, so I'm going to come and you're going to see exactly what I got. It's like, oh, my God, we've got to go through this all over again, don't we? I just wanted to, I digress quite a bit tonight, but I just wanted to say that black belt class was specifically set up originally so that black belts and brown belts could work together to prepare the brown belts for their Shodan.
Well, you know that... The thing that I got out of the messaging on the board with the guy was, I mean, and I also want to clear something out. Earlier, we were saying that Shodan, and kind of a divisive manner. The backstory is, we were talking about this before we came on, was this guy has just recently gotten his shodan in the style that he studies, which I'm fairly sure is Wado-ryu. And so he had just gotten it, and I mean, not just a few months ago. And so when we say that shodan, we're not saying that, you know, shodans are like below us, because, you know, let me tell you.
No.
I got raked over the coals on Saturday for some of the stuff that I should have known from being a shodan. But you can't work on everything all the time. Anywho, what I was going to say was the impression that I got from his reply to me was, or actually I guess his reply to whoever had originally posted about it, was that when you get to black belt, if you're training together that much, when you get to black belt, there's not that much more you can learn. And he was saying in that guy's school, you know, and I can't speak to either of their schools, but I mean, I think that's kind of a shaky basis for an accusation at best, an argument an argument at best, is the fact that there's, you know, because everyone trains together, there's less you're going to learn at black belt somehow. And I mean, maybe they only have one rank of black belt. You know, and so maybe that's the point in his school is when you achieve your black belt, you really have learned almost everything there is to learn. You know, but when I look at our kata after shodan, I mean, there's only a few more kata, a handful of kata after shodan in our style. What? You know, only five or six more kata. There's only three or four more kobudo kata. You know, so really, yeah, in theory, there's not that much more to learn. But you know.
But
there are concepts to master.
But that's exactly that's just it. When presented with a question like this, I try to think of extremes. And when I'm teaching, say I'm teaching a class, and there's black belts and white belts, and white belts know maybe one or two katas. I don't judge the way the kata is done by the white belt and the black belt the same. The white belt can know the moves, and I'm happy. The black belt, and not that I teach them any black belts in class, I don't. I'm thinking of myself as a student. My kata has got to be 100 times better than it can't just be the moves. It has to be the moves with knowledge inside it. And you never stop learning. I mean, I'm talking about like our first two, three katas. I have to do them as a black belt so much better than when I was a white belt. It's not just I learned it and then I go on.
Yeah, I mean, it's just as Jim was saying, you're kind of an example. You know, on Saturday, I was the senior Don rank at the thing, so I was up in front all the time. But there were like, you know, Kobudo exercises. I mean, I knew them, but I didn't know the order of them. And there was, you know, different people at different schools, so the count is different. And, you know, and I was like, the pressure was on me. And I even emailed John, the instructor, and I said, like, you know, sorry, I was up in front and I spaced on all of the stuff, and he emailed me back and said, that's why I put you in front. You know, because that's what you're in front. You have your own school now. That's how he teaches me. Yeah. You know, he's like, just throw you out there, and you know, and then later he talks to me about it. So, but the pressure was on, and to be up in front, you know, people behind me, what are they seeing? Are they seeing me do it correctly? Are they counting right? Are they following me? You know, there's all that pressure, and you know, but I'm a Don rank, woohoo! But you know, I can still look like a goober to those guys in the back.
Yeah, and I mean, just because someone can perform a kata doesn't mean they know the kata. Like Pete was saying, you know, I mean, okay, so you know the moves, and you can maybe, you know, get through it by yourself. And maybe you know the stances and you know all the techniques, okay. But do you know the bunkai for that kata, for the entire kata, or do you know several different levels of bunkai for some moves in the kata? You know, there are just so much muscle memory. I'm not articulating my point very well here, but there's just so much that you can't teach to someone that they just have to do, you know. And it doesn't come to them overnight. I don't care how good they are. There's, you have to do kata year after year after year before you finally begin to understand, like, you know, how your body's going to move and balance and how to generate power. And I mean, we had a seventh dan an eighth dan and a seventh dan on our boards, you know, talking about reverse punch, you know, the proper execution of a reverse punch. And it generated a good debate, you know, from not only folks from our style and our association, but other martial artists from other styles. And, you know, it was a good, healthy debate. But here you got, you know, these high ranks talking about something as simple as a reverse punch and how to generate power from it. You know, I mean, again, I'm going back to my initial point, is that, you know, you never, ever, you know, are through studying basics. Because everything comes out of your basics, obviously, you know.
Exactly.
Yeah, everything builds on.
That's right. That's right. So, I mean, it shouldn't matter. I mean, it's nice if you can do what we do in our school and have one class a week where black belts can train together. But, I mean, you know, like you said, Paul, there is no like secret scroll that we're pulling out, you know, and you know, standing over reading whatever. It's just people doing basics. Karate is nothing but basics.
Yeah.
You know, the inside joke for myself that builds on that is I have a folder that I took the time to, like, you know, write the kata out, and I got on the computer and I made like a nice sheet. So I have like pretty much up to first cue, I have like all the kata written out and all the exercises written out, and I have all the stuff written out. And so on the front of it, I wrote like the ancient scrolls on the front, and I just and like some like old, because it's like, yeah, ooh, that's all the information. But that really, you know, if you have all that stuff, you've got the style. Essentially, because it's all the basics, you know, it's all the basic kata, it's all the basic kudo, it's all the basic exercises, it's all the warm-ups, you know, and that's kind of what I use to kind of remind myself sometimes when I forget some of the stuff. So,
and the best time to remember or to freshen up on that stuff is when you're teaching lower belts, or when you're even working, not even being the head of the class teaching, when you're working with lower belts is the best time to work on that stuff. The best time that I get my basics back, if I need to refresh on them, is when I'm doing warm-ups and working on the basics. Because while everybody's standing there, I'm in my stance. And first of all, I have to know it looks good for everybody else. And secondly, I concentrate on how it feels, you know, whether it should, if it should hurt a little bit, whether it does, you know, if it's pulling the muscles affecting the muscles in the right places. I do that while I'm in basics. That's the best, or while I'm in warm-ups, that's the best time to do it for me.
Hey, I also have kind of a flip side to this. When in the message board, I'm talking to the guy, and there's other people talking, and the guy who I was going back and forth with said they have an assistant teaching program that they start at fifth Q. He says, you know, every black belt is qualified to teach beginner and intermediate classes, but people begin assisting in classes at fifth Q. And the guy who originally had written in saying that their black belts trained together and really kind of kicked off that whole thing actually said, this is my inflection, but what I'm assuming what he is saying is, fifth Q, assisting? Okay. So maybe at his school, unless you're a black belt, you don't teach. So it's actually kind of the yin and the yang of, you know, maybe this one guy saying, you know, black belt should really only learn when they're training with one another, but then saying, but they start learning at fifth Q, and then the same guy going, oh, I can't learn from somebody who's fifth Q. So when do people start teaching in your schools or assisting?
It's beyond fifth Q. I would say, you know, if they're about third Q, you know, if they're a brown belt, that's when they start. You know, you might have them do the warm-ups first, you know, and let them do that. But it's always under the direction of a dan rank. Always, you know. And what you're doing is, I think it's very important. And maybe the earlier the better. I think it depends on the student. Maybe there are students who at 5th Q are mature enough to begin to learn how to teach, and maybe some other people need a little bit more time and they should wait to 3rd or 2nd Q, whatever. But yeah, if you're going to – there's an art to teaching. You know, I mean, you can be an excellent martial artist and not be a very good teacher, mm-hmm. you know. So it's important to learn, you know, how to impart that knowledge to somebody who has completely different expectations from what you know where they should be. I mean, you got students who just want to, you know, look like, you know, something out of a video game or one of these Japanese anime, you know, cartoons or something like that. You know, they think that that's what the martial arts are, you know, and so you got to kind of help them change their mindset. But yeah, the teaching is very important. And if you want to start at 5th Q, I got no problem with that. Again, as long as it's under the close supervision of a Dan rank.
But
that
would be
Let me break in real quick and just remind something that Gene just reminded me about. Anybody who has a karate school or a martial arts school, new Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles movies are coming out, kids.
All right.
There's going to be a big wave of kids wanting to do martial arts.
Well, that's good.
Stand by.
That's good, because that's what we need. You know, I think that the industry, I hesitate to call it that, but you know, sometimes that's what it is. What the industry needs is another good, big martial arts epic movie like Enter the Dragon or something like that. You know, just to kind of regenerate the enthusiasm among the public.
Mm-hmm. Well, I agree. But to get back to the teaching, I don't think teaching, like everything else in life, I don't think it's one or the other. In our school, maybe our school is unique, is we don't necessarily encourage it, but we welcome it when an upper belt, I mean, you know, 5th Q or even 6th or 7th, well, 6th Q, gives a little guidance to the person next to them if they're a lower belt.
Oh, definitely, yeah. You know, in my school, I intend to encourage it, because, I mean, to test for 10th Q, you have to know all the 25 basics. And to demonstrate that, you're going to have to do it in front of the class. You know, you can't just, and it's going to be, you know, hey, you know, get up there and do them, lead the class in them, you know, unless I have like a whole bunch of people doing it at once. But anyway, you know, and all through, you know, when I was coming up through the Q ranks, I knew, depending on class size, there'd be times when we'd have somebody new in, so the sensei would say, you know, I'm going to take him in the back, and or you know, they either say, I'm taking him in the back, and you run class, you know, whoever the next senior bank belt was, Q rank, or they would have the senior Q rank go in the back and say, you know, show them the footwork, show them the stances, and show them this and this and this, you know, and I'll be buying a little bit, you know, and they would either lead class or they would help, you know, and so I think coming up through the class, especially like at green belt, is when people should start kind of paying attention to their dojo and trying to maybe give a little bit back by, you know, helping the people below them or, you know, doing whatever. But brown belt, you should definitely be. So a brown belt, I think, is when they, you know, they really should be, okay, you know, brown belt, you lead class. So they come around and, you know, correct and stuff.
And you made a very good point, Paul, that I just want to emphasize. You're right, when you get to be, okay, I think you mentioned green belt or whatever, but when you get to be a Shodan or just training to become a Shodan, okay, you've come that far. You owe the style, in my opinion. You know,
definitely.
You owe the, you know, the people that have invested the time and effort and energy in you. You owe to them and to the style. You know, and chances are those people that you owe are black belts. Okay, so once you become a black belt yourself, you know, you owe it to your style, your school, your sensei, to pass on that information to the Q ranks. Okay, and to have an elitist kind of an attitude where you don't have to work with them anymore, or you shouldn't be expected to, is just completely wrong. That's nobody you want to have in your dojo.
You know what? I don't know about you guys. Do you guys have a Are you guys top heavy? Are you? I mean, in your classes, you have a lot of more advanced belts. I'm not necessarily saying all, you know, Shodan and above. It could be just, you know, a lot of brown belts and maybe a lot of green belts and not so many white belts, or either the other way around, or is it, you know, does because I think that puts a lot of spin on the dynamic as far as like when there's, you know, when there's like, I don't know, if you got like six guys who are black belt, and then you've got, you know, 15 or 20 people who are Q ranked and above, I'm sure there's all those six guys are going to be going, well, someone else will get it, you know, kind of thing. So maybe it doesn't make it as important to them to be part of the school when they're one of six or eight black belts.
I think you find most traditional schools that have been around for a while are top heavy.
Yeah.
Because the students who are really into it and it's become part of their lifestyle, they stay. And the other people who are your customers, you know, they tend to come and go.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that most traditional schools, like I say, the established traditional schools tend to be kind of top heavy. Ours is too, for sure. Yeah, we don't have too many. We don't have as many people in the Q rank as we do in the Dan rank.
But that's an ebb and flow type thing too.
Mm-hmm.
I think the movie you talked about earlier will change that to a certain extent.
Yeah, there's gonna be a big wash, and you know you have like 20 people come in, and out of which you'll keep three after, you know, 6 months or whatever. Well, yeah, my thrust is something that I noticed in some of the schools in our style. I've seen, you know, we go to camp and there'll be, you know, a school with you know, a seventh degree and like two or three sixth degrees and a couple four or five fourths, and then, you know, a smattering of thirds and seconds or whatever, and it's like, and you're all working in the same school? And I guess because I never had that. You know, we always had, like, we had, like, one guy who was a black belt. And then, you know, finally about the time he moved up to second degree, we had another guy, or maybe two more guys that made their Shodan, you know. And it was always just like, you know, at one time we had about four or five guys who were Shodans or Nidons, and we were like, woohoo, we're, you know. But we also actually had a good number of Q ranks. But we've just never had that many Udansha in a class, and I look at it, I'm like, well, you know, you've got one guy who's the sensei, and you've got one guy who's one rank below him, or two guys that are one rank below him, and it's like, well, how do you, I mean, I don't know, as an instructor, you know, if it's your school and you've got so many people underneath you, how do you, you know, handle that as far as, I guess maybe it's great because you can expand classes if you have your own location, but if you just have one location, it seems to me that I guess maybe when you get to, you know, fourth or fifth degree, you should be like going for your own school. What do you guys think about that?
I think it's up to each person.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Well, way to tread the fence there, guys. Wait a minute.
You know, that would be a good topic for another podcast.
Yeah.
I mean, personally, where I'm at, you know, I'm content where I am. I've got no desire to open my own school. You know, but I have reasons for that. And I don't know. I mean, I envy you, Paul, and I admire you because it's a lot of work, you know, to market yourself and to go through the headaches. I mean, I see what Renchi Tony Musso goes through. I hear what Kiyoshi Bob Hurton goes through. And I mean, man, I don't know how you guys do it, you know. So, but anyway, maybe we can talk about that another time. Deal?
Sounds like a good topic to me.
Deal. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, then, I think that we ought to bring it to the close, so to speak. I think that, you know, we would agree that with you, Paul, that, you know, the brown belts and black belts, there's absolutely no reason why they can't train together, that black belts can learn and are obligated to teach, you know, brown belts or any Q rank. And, you know, it's just this Shodan's, lack of maturity, and maybe he has a you know, a little bit of an ego that causes him to have this perspective. But anyway, you're right and he's wrong.
you know, it may just be like his dojo. Everyone's dojo is different, and you know, some people drink, you know, their instructor's Kool-Aid, and some people have a different flavor, you know. And then some people just drink water, I guess. I don't know.
Mm. All right, well, I guess that'll do it for episode 42 of Karate Cafe's podcast. Remember, we have some forums and some blogs and a bunch of other stuff on our website. And what's the website address there, Paul?
It is Karate Cafe, and the forums are located at karatecafe.com/forums.
Okay. And we also have, like Pete said at the beginning of the show, we've been getting a lot of emails, and we appreciate that from everybody. Some folks have offered some topics that we might discuss next time, and we'll take that into due consideration, and you never know, we'll probably be talking about them. But the address for the emails, Pete, what was that again?
KarateCafe@gmail.com.
Okay. Any closing thoughts, you guys? Any words of wisdom?
Keep an eye on the brown belts.
Yeah, you never know about them brown belts.
And stay away from the virtual tough guys, huh?
Exactly.
All right. Well, until next time, this is Gene Myers.
Pete Shambo.
Paul Wilson.
Thanks again for listening to Karate Cafe's podcast, and we'll talk to you again next time.